This episode of HBR is brought to you by anhonesthost.com. Get 15% discount on all shared hosting with the offer code HBR15. That's HBR15. Better web hosting that's honest and fair at anhonesthost.com.
Hello, Hacker Public Radio. This is Semiotic Robotic, here with special guest Ginny Skalski.
Hey, everybody.
With your weekly open source news break from opensource.com. Recently at opensource.com, we featured an in-depth comparative analysis of three prominent open source content management systems, Drupal, Joomla, and WordPress. Writer Nitish Tiwari pits these heavy-hitting CMSs against one another, explaining how they stack up in four key respects: installation time and complexity, plugin and theme availability, ease of use, and customization and upgrades. Spoiler alert, Tiwari never settles on a single winner. Instead, he tells readers which CMS to select depending on their priorities. Want an application with plenty of configuration options during installation? Tiwari recommends Joomla. Want something that's easily upgradable? In that case, Tiwari would tell you to install WordPress. If you're thinking of managing a website, blog, or other online resource the open source way, then you simply can't miss this extensive analysis.
That was a great article. I actually tweeted that out to my followers because I know there's a lot of people who want to start blogging but just don't know where to start.
Absolutely.
And I thought that article did a good job of breaking down some open source CMS options. Was there any CMS option in there that you're using? I know Drupal, certainly, for open source.
Absolutely. Yeah, I would have to say Drupal. That's what we use to power opensource.com. And we just transitioned, actually, from Drupal 6 to Drupal 7. We did that upgrade at the end of May. And
awesome.
It was a tough upgrade because anytime you upgrade like your key infrastructure for your primary project, it's a little harrowing and a little scary. But it was awesome. Our community manager had it down to a science. We had like, oh my gosh, the downtime we had on the site was like a minute or something
minute?
Like that. Something
wow.
crazy like that. Yeah, and you know, in my opinion, it was actually kind of a fun team building exercise, or like just a good team building experience, like
right.
to go through the upgrade together. All of us troubleshooting bugs and like sort of all up early in the morning, getting ready to watch the upgrade happen and be online on IRC, like checking things. And it was fun. I really enjoyed it. But I would have to go with Drupal because it's what powers opensource.com.
I wonder how many people would look at upgrading their platform as a good team-building experience. I like your optimism there. That's really good. Well, here's another can't-miss piece. This one's by community moderator Joshua Holm, who introduces us to a set of open-source tools designed to take some of the stress out of designing and giving presentations. Holm stresses that the presentation tool chain he details on opensource.com is relatively platform-agnostic. It's built around HTML5, CSS3, and JavaScript, so presenters can transmit slide decks seamlessly across the web without feeling locked into any particular presentation software platform or environment. Because these presentation frameworks are open source, Holm writes, they can be extended and enhanced in any way you wish. Though to be fair, writing HTML, CSS, and JavaScript is a little more complicated than just using PowerPoint, Keynote, or Impress, Holm says. I think that's a fair analysis.
Yeah.
Holm walks readers through three tools, Impress.js, Hovercraft, and Strut, applications that allow presenters to create slide decks in plain old read structured text or markdown, then output them in any number of cross-platform compatible formats.
So have you used this? Have you tried Impress.js?
I haven't tried it yet. I've seen presentations on it, and I think it's really slick. It's definitely something I'd like to try sometime, but I've not yet. Tried Hovercraft or Strut.
Yeah, I haven't either, but I have to say, as like as a huge Markdown fan who basically lives in Markdown, I would love to be able to make slide decks in Markdown. That just is like a holy grail for me. So I posted a comment to Joshua at the end of his article and just said he's opened up a whole new world for me.
That's awesome.
Because I'm interested in trying this out. But you said you saw it, right? It looks like Prezi, like the output looks like Prezi or what?
Yeah, the two Impress.js presentations I saw definitely had a sort of a Prezi feel to them. They were very interactive and the text and type was moving, and it was definitely a step above your standard PowerPoint or other typical presentation.
What's cool to me about this is the way that, because presentation software, like, because slide decks play such an important part in presentations anymore, and because people are increasingly doing presentations remotely, so, you know, getting a team together for even something as simple as like a lug meeting that has people in multiple locations or something like that, like, you would have to send a slide deck to everybody, post it somewhere, have them download the slide deck or email it out or whatever. Here you just create a whole slide deck in HTML5, CSS, and JavaScript, put it on the web, and people load it up. You know, they find it on the web, they probably have a URL, they can go to it, and it's amazing. No more shipping around slide decks. You can make changes at the last minute. You know, you ship your slide decks to everybody, and then you're like, oh, geez, you know, slide 46 has a mistake, I got to fix it and send it back out to everybody else or whatever. Or, oh, we just got that quarterly report in the day before I sent my slide, the day after I sent my slides, so now I've got to redo it. So this is just it just seems like, again, holy grail of presentation software. So I'm anxious to try it out.
And that's a good point, too, because one of the two Impress.js presentations I saw was I was going through an old conference website and looking at who the speakers were, and I saw that one of the speakers had used it. So I clicked on it, and I went through his entire conference presentation like several months later, which normally I would have never downloaded the slides.
Right,
I opened them on my laptop
and
scrolled through them. So it was a really cool way to quickly have access to it.
That's
and
right.
See it even months later when it could be stale at that point, which it wasn't.
All right, one final story here. In our health channel, we're featuring a piece from OpenHatch's Shauna Gordon-McKeon, who also volunteers on the Open Science Collaborative. Gordon-McKeon explains Wiki Project Med, a nonprofit corporation that brings together doctors wishing to contribute and promote high-quality health content on Wikipedia. Jake Orlowitz, Outreach Coordinator at Wiki Project Med, or WPM, explains that, quote, people are, for better or worse, learning about life and death issues through Wikipedia. So we need to make sure that content is accurate, up-to-date, well-sourced, comprehensive, and accessible. For readers with no native medical literature, Wikipedia may well be the only option they have to learn about health and disease, end quote. To this end, WPM organizes volunteer writers and translators to help enhance the quality of the medical information available on Wikipedia. Gordon-McKeon explains how the team avoids those inevitable edit wars and works to decrease the stigma associated with seeking guidance from an online encyclopedia.
You know, I'm not really surprised that a lot of people do get their medical information from Wikipedia because, you know, in this Google culture, people go online, they Google what their ailments are, and often Wikipedia is the
first thing that comes up.
Yeah. So that's not surprising to me, but it's interesting to read that they're trying to decrease the stigma associated with seeking guidance from an online encyclopedia.
Right.
Do you think that stigma will ever go away and that'll become, you know, commonplace accepted? Go to your online encyclopedia first?
I think so, to be honest, because, I mean, I think this was what, like, WebMD and places like that were supposed, this was the problem they were supposed to solve, right? It's really a problem of, I think it's sort of a problem of branding and a kind of a problem of sort of cultural expectation, right? So I think there still is a stigma associated with online encyclopedias like Wikipedia for anything as, you know, so quote-unquote serious as you know, health and disease, but for pop culture topics, it's like an authoritative resource, right? So there's some weird stigma attached to certain topics and not others. And this is not to say that, you know, people should use Wikipedia as, you know, the single source for self-diagnosis, but it seems to me that that stigma is still very strong.
And I think that people maybe don't use it as the single source because you look something up online when something's wrong with you, and if it doesn't say what you want it to say, you try to go to like three other sources and find the one that says. So maybe it's a starting point depending on your ailment, and then you keep going further.
That's right. Yeah, and I think that you know, Wikipedia is a good sort of first point of contact for folks who are looking about anything, whether it be, you know, a summary of last night's Big Bang Theory episode or, you know, some kind of explanation of symptoms that they're experiencing. It's a point of contact for people, but you know, the thing that Wikipedia does really well and that they've been up in their game in lately is consensus-based relevance, consensus-based authority, and sourcing, right? So they've been really, really aggressive with sourcing of stories. And so Wikipedia, if anything, provides a really nice user-curated set of links that you can use to trace a Wikipedia entry to see where it went. But I think this project here, Wiki Project Med, is taking the right approach and saying, look, we've already got this platform here. Yep. We've already got, and people are already using it. Let's meet people where they are and try to give them, like, make this resource better for them because it's what they're using, right? Mm-hmm. It's not like, well, we know better than you and we're going to make this resource that's going to be better than Wikipedia. That's a really tall order nowadays. And so this is a sort of approach where, you know, doctors and health professionals want to meet people where they are and make the resources that they're already using better for them. And I like that effort.
I just had an idea. Tell me what you think about this.
Okay.
You know, as we're moving to electronic health records, how cool would it be if I'm a physician, I have my electronic health record pulled up, you know, it's the end of my day, I'm typing up my things, from my notes from the day, and all of a sudden I get a push notification about a question on Wikipedia. Is this true or false? Can you explain? And so I take a moment and answer that question with the, you know, the proliferation of electronic health records.
Right,
if every
right.
doctor answered one question that was pushed to them per day,
right.
you could gather a pretty robust catalog
so
of answers.
Yeah, so it's kind of like a cross between CAPTCHA and crowdsourcing, you know what I mean? Like to log out, answer this question.
That's right. Like, yes. We need to make that, Ryan.
Okay, there's our million. Well, on that note, that's all for this news break from opensource.com. For more on these stories, be sure to check out the show notes for this episode. And as always, you'll find a daily dose of open source news at opensource.com. Until next time, dear listeners, this is Semiotic Robotic.
And this is Jenny Skalski wishing you peace, love, and open source.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HBR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.